City Talk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in business. And every Sunday, I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. This week, I'm focusing on politics, more specifically the Conservative Party, and what a Tory government would mean to Liverpool and our business community. Despite a shrinking of David Cameron's poll lead before Christmas, a disastrous start to 2010 for Gordon Brown and Labour has seen the Tories re-establish a healthy 13-point advantage in the latest polls, and barring a major change to fortunes, the Conservatives look set for government for the first time in 13 years. Ironically, at a local level, the Labour Party seems in better shape and is predicted to take control of Liverpool City Council at the forthcoming local elections in May. So, what would a Tory government mean to Liverpool? The city's memories of previous Conservative administrations are mixed. Margaret Thatcher was the equivalent to Beelzebub in the eyes of many Liverpudlians, but the Minister for Merseyside, Michael Heseltine, is still credited by some as the man who acted as the catalyst for change and Liverpool from a basket case into the regenerated, modern, thriving city we see today. Joining me in the studio to discuss this question are Esther McVeigh, who is the prospective parliamentary candidate for the Conservatives in Wirral West, Dougal Paver, the Managing Director of Marketing, PR and Communications Agency Paver Smith, and David Wade-Smith, a former chairman of the Liverpool Chamber of Commerce and now the chairman of successful smart car brand LiveSmart. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Dougal, if I can come to you first, do you think Liverpool's business community is looking forward to change, or is there a view maybe that it's better the devil you know?
I think they're looking forward to stable government that has business-friendly policies, to be honest. For the early years of the Labour government, that was quite evident. They were very supportive of business and had a very business-friendly agenda. There's a mixed view on where they are now in that regard, but I think of looking to a Conservative government, they will want to see signs that there's hope for the future, there's optimism, that they can plan ahead confidently in terms of their business.
And Esther, is that what we can expect, a business-friendly Conservative government?
Absolutely. I mean, traditionally, the Conservative Party has always been the party of the small business. I view the Conservative Party that it looks on things very practically and says these small businesses are the engines of growth. They are the engines of the whole economy, and we need to support them. We need business, not just on Merseyside, right across the country, because that's what makes for a stable, prosperous country as a whole. So, of course, it will be supported.
Are there any specific proposals that you're aware of that you think immediately would start to help the business community grow and hopefully come out of what was, let's face it, a horrible 2009.
There's a couple here which I think will be key. It's taken a long time to put these together. A lot of consultations gone out. A lot of the shadow cabinet ministers have been out speaking with business to say what would work for them. There's no point politicians thinking what would work for them. They've got to know what will work on the ground. And I think this one, any new business started within the first 2 years of a Conservative government will pay no employers national insurance on their first 10 employees. Now, that will be something that I think will really act as an engine for growth, because I think that is key. It is a big expenditure. And also what you want is maybe not just companies just starting off. You do want them to develop and grow as well. And I think that's key. I think the other one as well, we will reverse the Labour's planned increase in small company corporation tax from 22p back down to 20p. I think that is key. You can't have more and more tax, because you're clobbering the people who are trying to keep the country afloat. And I think another thing, they're going to create a one-in, one-out requirement for any new regulation. Therefore, if a new regulation comes in, other ones have got to go out with a further 5% reduction. And there will also be sunset clauses to all regulators during the first term of a Conservative government. And then those regulators will be reassessed and their duties and size and functions reviewed. And I think all of this is trying to support small businesses and, well, all businesses, really.
Mm. David, that'll be music to the ear of many businesses in Liverpool,
yeah,
I'd have thought.
Yes. Definitely, it would definitely make a difference. In national insurance has risen considerably over recent years, and the prospect for a small business to take away that cost would be a real incentive for that organisation, as would any tax breaks to small businesses.
Are there any other initiatives, Dougal, that you can think of, particularly for businesses in cities? Because, you know, we are still in Liverpool, coming from a very, very low base a decade or so ago. We were on the floor. I mean, it's recognisable now, isn't it, the city from where we once were. Mm-hmm. But do you think there is a case maybe for central government to look at tax breaks for city centre businesses? I think the NI initiative is certainly welcome, isn't it?
I'd welcome the NI initiative, certainly. And the Conservatives in their last administration had a number of tax breaks that were city-based or zonal-based in different cities. In some cities, there was a mixed picture. It depended upon the overall state of the economy. It took a while for them to gain traction in Liverpool, for example, whereas in London Docklands, they had a dramatic effect. But then London as a capital had a fundamentally different economy from Liverpool. Mm. So I think it'd be worth looking at again. The danger there is that you tilt the playing field against other businesses. Why would you penalise one business for being in a certain postcode, sure, and support another? You know, the jobs that they sustain, the taxes that they pay, are as valid as the next business. Yeah. So that needs very careful thought, I would have thought so. Mm. Mm. Liverpool's doing well now as an economy, and it's much more broadly based. We're much less susceptible to shocks of losing major employers now than we were in the 80s and 90s. So I think we need to think about how can we add further impetus overall to that, the mix in the economy. And I think there's some interesting thinking from all sides going on there, even right down to city level by the likes of Liverpool Vision and the Mersey Partnership.
Mm. Esther, I suppose that the thing that concerns everyone in the country, not just the business community at the moment, is this massive budget deficit that we've got to contend with over the next Lord knows how many years now. When you're looking at tax breaks for business, that must be deemed as difficult to deliver, given that budget deficit, which, again, you're committed to reducing twice as quickly as Labour have suggested they would. Do you think that there's a danger, perhaps, that George Osborne could actually destabilise the fragile recovery that we're experiencing at the moment by trying to reduce that deficit too quickly?
No, I think what they're looking at here is how do we protect, sort of, as you say, fragile businesses? How do we keep people employed? Because unemployment will be a problem, hence the national insurance reduction there, and trying to get people, as I say, to maybe employ extra people, because there's other apprenticeship schemes here that we're going to do. And I think they've got to look at the economy as a whole. Where could we cut the costs there? But within that, how do we protect and grow businesses, which ultimately we need to do? Going back to a point Dougal was talking about there, where how could we get more people winning work? How could we do that without maybe harming other parts of the country? I think another thing that the Conservative government are looking at is how to win contracts for the private sector from the public sector. Yeah. So, yes, that would probably be a guaranteed income, but it would help rejuvenate a private sector, maybe develop a private sector and grow it. And simple things like the single pre-qualification process for government contracts worth less than £50,000, and they'll also scrap the rule for companies to provide 3 years of full audited accounts before being able to bid, and also publish all government contracts worth over £10,000. They will be published online. Mm. So that's what they're trying to do, probably make less state dependent cultures and more private cultures, and help them grow, and very much, I think, fence and protect them.
I think any changes to procurement regulations at the moment, again, would be something that certainly downtown members would welcome. This is City Talks Business with Frank McKenna. Today we're looking at What would a Tory government mean to Liverpool? We've spoken about the budget deficit and Conservatives' general policies for business. We're now going to look at some of the things that Liverpool might anticipate. And I'm coming on to the issue of the controversial tramline. David Wade-Smith and I, big supporters of a tram from Kirby into Liverpool. David, what's your reading of where we're at this point as far as that particular initiative is concerned?
Well, I think we're in very good shape as a city. Only this morning, the Daily Post reported that Mersey Travel have now preserved the Transport and Works Act that the park and ride scheme will go ahead almost immediately. I think the preparation work has been done. I was hearing just the other day that if the button was pressed tomorrow, we would have a new tram line one system and city loop line within 2 years. So even by the London Olympics, we could be riding around on trams in Liverpool. So it's in very good shape. It's just a matter of local will and national political will to make it happen. And I hope under a future administration and especially under the if it was a Tory administration, there's an interesting fact that I think it's all the major tram networks in the UK have actually been started under Tory administrations.
Is that right? Yeah.
And therefore it would bode very positively, very well for our own network here in Liverpool.
And how did you take the announcement that Michael Heseltine may well have a role to play in making that final decision as far as Liverpool's tram is concerned?
I saw it as very, very positive for the city. I mean, his reputation in the city is very strong as that first minister for Merseyside back in the difficult days of the 80s. I think regeneration, which was the basis on which he took on that mantle as Minister for Merseyside, but regeneration's a big issue. And if you to study the Line 1 tram line carefully, you see that it runs through some of the most deprived areas of the city, between the city centre, the waterfront and the city centre, and out up into the northeast of the city and Kirby. But areas like Norris Green, Tubrook and Croxteth that have seen very little or almost no regeneration activity over the past few years, whilst we've seen so much in the city centre itself, I think it would be very timely to make that investment in the years coming ahead. I think the impact that it would have on that corridor would be quite spectacular.
I think it's always interesting how well thought of, whoever you speak to, Michael Heseltine still is in Liverpool. You know, whatever your political persuasion, the fact is that he is seen as someone who had a real positive impact on the politics of Liverpool and on the city's future. And David mentioned this job role that he had, Minister for Merseyside. Now, again, there is talk of a future Conservative administration actually having a minister for Merseyside or minister for all the major cities. Again, I'll come to you, Dougal. What do you think about that particular proposal? And if I can take it a bit further, the proposal to have a referendum in major cities on the idea of elected mayors?
I think on the issue of a minister for Merseyside, I think that would be welcomed. We've just seen from the comments David's made about having to have a dialogue with government in order to unlock major sources of strategic funding for things like tram lines, that Merseyside needs its voice heard in Whitehall. And if we have a minister batting for us who understands the local issues and the personalities and who can work within them and with them to positive end, that's got to be good. And Michael Heseltine, there's no doubt, did an outstanding job, in my view, in very difficult times. And it's always fascinating to have him reflect back on those times. As for an elected mayor, you've got examples at the cobbled end of the M62 where you have outstanding leadership and clearly no need for an elected mayor. You have a very, very effective executive supported by a clear mandate from the electorate for a strong political party in Manchester. And I think they would probably feel, why do we need an elected mayor when we're doing such a good job? So perhaps the issue isn't necessarily we need an elected mayor. The issue might be we need more effective governance stronger, better quality leadership, perhaps, in certain cities, and perhaps greater efficiency. You know, does Liverpool, greater Liverpool, need six local authorities for what is actually a very, very cohesive conurbation? So, you know, perhaps there's a broader debate there, and of which the elected mayor issue can form part, but I'm not necessarily sure, because there's good and bad examples of it in practice, that it perhaps is right for Liverpool. I don't know yet.
It's, again, good point that you make in terms of local government structures in not just Merseyside, elsewhere in the northwest as well. I mean, in Lancashire, there's 14 local authorities, for example, which is, you know, just makes total nonsense of this issue of public sector expenditure. So, you know, local government reorganisation, I think, should be something any future government should look at. But David, you've worked across the city region with your tourism hat on. You've done an awful lot through the Mersey Partnership. Those sorts of divisions don't help often, do they? I mean, not just with the tram issue, but other projects and initiatives as well.
No, they don't happen. And we still have this rather sort of cynical fact staring us in the face that we've not really achieved any major regeneration projects on a cross-boundary basis. There may be some room for debate there, you know, perhaps the bridge. But when you really closely examine how Halton are tackling the bridge, they're tackling it very independently, taking it on their own. You could say also, well, capital of culture, we all pulled together. Well, we did in the end, and it really was in the end. But it was actually Liverpool, the city of Liverpool, that drove the agenda from the very start. And when you go back to the early part of the last decade, 2000 to 2002, you know, Liverpool were very much on their own. And I think ultimately, and picking up on something that Dougal was saying, is that it is about leadership, but it's also about a city region's ability to pull together. And the Liverpool city region still has a very long way to go. It can be done. It could even be done possibly with the existing administrations. But there has to be really more determination to pull together. And when you look at successful cities, and we can't deny the fact that Manchester has a reputation internationally as one of the best run cities in Europe. But other cities like Gothenburg or Valencia, is that when you scrutinise why those cities work so well, it is their ability for boroughs and districts to pull together for a common cause.
And you've been around Merseyside for a long time now, Esther. I mean, that role...
yeah, born here back in the 60s, but go on.
Well, I thought it was the 70s you were
70s
born.
70s it is.
You're looking well on it.
Thanks.
That Minister for Merseyside role, I mean, that could be a really exciting position for somebody, couldn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. And I think what we saw here was Heseltine taking on that role, spearheading, you know, what we could do as a region, taking it forward. I mean, you know, let's be honest, you know, the Albert Dock and what happened there and what actually helped us get World Heritage status, what actually helped us win the Capital of Culture, all that started back in the 80s because he said something can be done here. When they were looking at bringing government departments out here, he was the one taking the land registry out to Birkenhead, bringing other things here. So we're saying, look, we need, as I said, engines of growth, whether that is public sector departments coming out here, which would provide jobs, and taking that forward. So I think it's key. Equally, I think working hand in hand with a mayor for the city would work as well, you know. And I think that would be for a city to choose if they want one or not. You know, you might not need one or you might not want one in Manchester, that's fine, but it would be voted on. People would go and elect one if they felt there was a role for it here. And what they're looking for, I think it is very much a choice from the city, and I think it's coming very much from this knowledge of, you know, 20, 30 years of Michael Heseltine. And he might think, actually, Liverpool could be a great city with somebody at the helm there, you know, bringing it all together, negotiating with government. I think it's very positive. And you're talking to a man who's got a lot of experience. And I think why a lot of people do like Heseltine, why he's still talked about. I mean, he came out of government, but you know what? He was still here. He was still a friend of Merseyside. Mm. I know him, and I know we've all met him, you know, personally, and I'd class him as a good friend. And he's got a soft spot for this city. Mm. And if you know him as an individual, I actually think he fits well into the city because he's a bit of a maverick individual himself. He's very creative. I've read some of his old school reports, which are like, this boy should be concentrating harder and doing better. And then off he goes and sets up a publishing empire, you know, does all these various things and goes into government. And he had a very, he still has a soft spot for the city. Mm. So we can see, I think, that maverick genius within our city. So maybe he's thinking a mayor could actually mould and blend quite well. Well, and as you say, if it is going to be, you know, a Labour council returning Labour MPs, it could be good to have somebody else who's maybe liaising, because it's not just about spearheading a city. It is about sort of constant negotiation, speaking with people. It is about communication. So it's up for us as a city to say, what do we need? What powers are we going to give to that individual, which you might have curtailed in certain ways, expanded in other ways? And at the end of the day, all everybody wants is something dynamic for this city. It is a phenomenal city. We've done a heck of a lot with the capital of culture. We've got a port, the topography's brilliant, the people are brilliant, the place to live's brilliant. Let's just take it to the next stage. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the area. Whatever year I was born, I won't give that away. And I've always, you know, I just love it and I love the people.
I think you've made the comment there about Heseltine still being a great friend to the city, and I think that's absolutely right. I think the problem Liverpool's had in the past is it hasn't had enough friends from the Conservative Party. And, you know, certainly over the past 2 to 3 years, Chris Grayling's been in Liverpool a lot, Philip Hammond's been in town this week, you know, so we're seeing increasingly a dialogue, a communication,
and
George Osborne
is, a, you know, again, a good friend of the city. Yes, he's Shadow Home Secretary, but they also made him Shadow Minister for Merseyside, yeah. And he does a lot, and he's constantly up here. And of course, he, you know, he started from a standstill start, as it were, because he's not from this region. But I can tell you, we put a heck of a lot of time in here to try and understand it. And there are people on the ground, like my good self. And if anybody knows this, and maybe they don't, the guy who's actually one of the key strategists for David Cameron is a Scouser. And he writes a lot of his policies. He's working with them, and he's saying, you know, what is compassionate conservatism? What does it mean to our city? What would work in Liverpool? And that is a Scouser right at the very, very top doing policy there. And also the guy who writes Cameron's speeches comes from Crosby as well, a young lad in his 20s called Sam Coates, and he works. So, you know, there's far more input into this new sort of conservative team than maybe there was in the past. And of course, you know, there's Debbie just up the road in Crosby, various other people who they've deliberately chosen, people who are from the region, who want the region to succeed.
Right. Well, thanks, Esther. This is City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm joined today by David Wade-Smith, Esther McVeigh and Dougal Paver. And we'll be back after this short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, welcome back to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. And I'm joined by Esther McVeigh, David Wade-Smith and Dougal Paver. We've looked at what a Conservative government would mean to Liverpool. I just want to take a few minutes to explore how Liverpool's developed over the past decade or so and what the future holds for the city. Dougal is somebody who's developed a very, very successful business here, now plying your trade in Manchester as well. Yep. Where do you feel Liverpool sits currently as an economic driver?
It's very strong, there's no doubt about that. It's got a very cohesive conurbation and travels a work area and draws people in from that extensively. And the city's starting to punch its weight again. It's got a much more diverse economy than it had in the 80s. And what's interesting is to see the strength of emerging sectors such as tourism and convention going, bio and life sciences. The automotive sector continues to hold its own and employs an awful lot of very well-paid and skilled people. So we've actually got quite a robust economy at the moment. And the issue is, how do we encourage more entrepreneurs to come to Liverpool and see it as a base where they can make money, find the right quality of people and drive their business forward from there? But I'm very positive. A lot of my clients who are Liverpool-based are very positive about where the city's headed. You know, we've had a very short recession here. by the standards of other cities. Mm. You know, unemployment has been falling for the last 4 months, and everybody knows that unemployment in a recession is a lagging indicator, tends to rise for at least 12 months after the end of a recession. And ours has fallen for 4 months on the row. So our recession, it seems, has been quite short here, and I think that's a testament to the work different people and different political parties, to be fair, have done in the last 10 years or so to rejig the regional economy. And the credit to the businesses, of course.
Yeah. Is it easier to attract staff, recruit, retain? Do we do enough with our super universities that we've got here?
We've got a very high graduate retention rate, and that speaks for itself. The four universities in the Liverpool postal area are outstanding and have their own niches and thrive accordingly. I don't find it personally difficult to recruit good people. I've recruited 30-odd in the last couple of years, and I've had no difficulty at all. It depends on the sector, of course, but for us, no, that's not been the case. We do find it easier in Manchester, but then it's a much, much bigger city with a much bigger pool of labour and in our industry, far more suppliers. So there's a bigger pool of competitors to draw from. But overall, no, Liverpool's fine.
David Dougal mentioned rightly that Liverpool's earning itself a reputation as a tourism and visitor destination, not before time. I know you've done an awful lot of work over the years on this particular issue. I think we can rightly say that it's really all systems going forward, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot not just been fixed over the last 10 years or so, but to a very high standard. Liverpool's, and for us here in this room and for some of the people we've been talking about, we see Liverpool as having such a fantastic and wonderful natural asset base, great people, people that when they work together can achieve anything they want to do. And we've done a lot of that over the past few years. The confidence of the city is sky high. There's an opportunity, I think a big opportunity, to spread that word. I mean, you could invite anyone to this city and they wouldn't cease to be anything other than very impressed with the place. So why don't we broadcast that message much, much louder and much clearer across the UK, Europe and the world? We've got fantastic opportunity coming up in throughout the course of this year in the Shanghai Expo 2010. And so that's evidence that the city is promoting itself further afield. Very ambitious, very bold plans. And then we've got this breathtaking new development that could take almost the entire rest of the century to put together, and that's the Peel Holdings plans for both sides of the Mersey estuary. But really, if Liverpool, the citizens of Liverpool, people, you mentioned the students, the graduates, if we could articulate those plans more clearly, what they could mean to a brighter future for the city. People talk about the 21st century belonging to cities. People are returning back to the large conurbations across the globe from cities like Shanghai. The population's growing, as our own is starting to do. With so much going for it, the city's never been in a better position to take advantage of it. And I hope that the political conditions, whatever way they move, fall in our favour, and that above all, we make the best of them.
Esther, do you think that positive image that we all feel and that new sense of confidence and self-belief that Liverpool now has is reflected nationwide? I know you spend a fair bit of time in London, as do I. I'm not convinced yet that we've actually overcome that barrier of people's perception of Liverpool. We still get that comment occasionally, don't we, from people south of the Watford Gap, that actually all is not right with Liverpool and we still don't quite trust the city to invest our money, relocate our businesses. Would that be fair? Do you think we've still got something more to do to convince some?
I think you're probably right, and I think that reputation has been spread by lots of TV programmes. They'll still remember Bread or Brookside or whatever it was, and everybody, you know, likes a joke, and it'll always be one at Liverpool, you know, Liverpool's expense, you know, what are they, you know, caricatured as. However, it is for us to prove that isn't the case. Yes, we're a city that can have a laugh. And yes, we're a city that doesn't mind having a laugh at our own expense. But do you know what? Behind that, there is a very passionate set of people, a very intelligent set of people. And I think with the Capital of Culture, which was a wonderful platform, I think we did showcase what we have. And I think you're quite right, people were surprised. So whether it is the arenas that people are now coming to, whether it was the MTV Music Awards, and obviously coming from the world of media, as my mates were the executive producers on that, and they were mightily impressed, whether it was the Sports Personality of the Year that was brought here, and everybody yet again was impressed. So I think we need to work with the media very much, so we need all of the people who are talking on our behalf, whether it is politicians, whether it is sort of civic leaders, whether it is business people, we all have a role to play. And I think we laugh at whatever we have or haven't done, but we put a very positive message through. I was just reading the book White Heat, all about like the 60s in Liverpool and how there was a monumental change in 64 with the government, and how four lads from Liverpool changed everything that were the Beatles, and how they were fundamentally behind this sort of classless sort of class change or whatever it was. And I thought the Beatles said everything for us, really. There they were, dynamic, bright, the best in the world, and could have a damn good laugh. And I think that's what we've got to do, and we can do it. I go into schools all the time, work with girls. I run a business women's club, 7,000 women on there. And I'm just always impressed with what we've got. And do people know we're the world leaders now in low energy light bulbs? We've got one of the world leaders for biodiesel. We've got another mate of mine invented, smart water, the first one of the greatest things, which after fingerprinting will be sort of fingerprinting for inanimate objects. These are all from people from the city. So it is here. We need to be proud of it and get it out there.
Well, on that very positive note, we'll draw our conversation to a close. Esther, Dougal and David, thank you very much for your contribution today.
Thank you.
See you all again soon.
Defo.
This is Downtown Liverpool in Business on City Talk 105.9.
Well, they were the views of a Conservative candidate and business leaders in the city about what a Tory government would mean to Liverpool. I'm now joined by the leader of the Labour group on Liverpool City Council, Jo Anderson. Welcome, Jo.
Hi, Frank. Welcome. Thanks, mate.
We were just having a conversation, as I say, with Esther McVeigh, who's the Tory candidate over on the Wirral. And she was suggesting that a minister for Merseyside, in her opinion, would be a step in the right direction and perhaps help with any future relationship between a Conservative government and a Labour council.
I think clearly there's an element of truth in that. I think somebody specifically with the responsibility of working for Merseyside gives it a more focused view, rather than as it stands, the government has a minister for the North West, and you know that works to an extent that we can have contact with them. But somebody specifically for Merseyside, I think would be a help. However, I have to qualify that with saying it depends very much on what they can offer and what the policies are in terms of supporting Liverpool in particular, where I'm coming from, but also benefiting the Merseyside region. I'm not so sure the policies would match. So it's okay, for instance, employing a carpet fitter, and if you've got no carpet to lay, sort of thing. I'm a little bit sceptical about that. But in the main, I think the principle of having somebody for a region like Merseyside rather than the whole of the North West would be a good idea.
Mm. I suppose the fear that a lot of people out there all have, Joe, is the memory of the last time we had a Conservative administration. And I made the point that Michael Heseltine is certainly thought of more fondly in this neck of the woods than Margaret Thatcher ever was. Mm-hmm. But the last thing the city needs is the sort of conflict that we experienced back then between a council here and central government. Do you envisage a more positive relationship, if you like, whatever the colour of the administration in Westminster, if you indeed do become leader of Liverpool City Council in May?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think the days of out and out conflict based on dogma is gone. I think we all face economic realities, whether it's national government or local government. And I think there's a certainly a willingness on my part to enter into meaningful discussions about how a government can support Liverpool and its prosperity and its future. And you know, I have no doubt whatsoever that if the Labour Party take control and I lead the council, that I would be working closely with government. If it was a Conservative government, so be it. Working closely with government to benefit the people of Liverpool. Again, that said, I have to qualify that a little bit with saying that, you know, I will robustly defend and champion Liverpool and want the government to do all it can to assist in terms of regeneration and to support the people of Liverpool, and I will fight Liverpool's corner. But it won't be in a way that we've seen in the 80s, because clearly, as I said, there were things done there, in my view, that were, well, we've only just sort of ended up, you know, paying back loans a while back. So that type of approach and that style of leadership will not be something that I will tolerate or lead in actual fact. So I think we can work closely with a Tory government. But as I said, I qualify that by saying I will robustly defend Liverpool and champion Liverpool and want the government to put resources into the city. And I'm a bit concerned about, you know, some of the spending commitments that the Conservative Party have made in terms of, you know, for instance, we get a great deal of protection from a Labour government policy on the grant assistance that we get. You know, we get what's called the floor mechanism, and it protects poor areas like the North West and in particular Liverpool. And if the Conservative government do away with that over the next 5 years, that will cost Liverpool £92 million. Now, they're not my figures. They're the city treasurer's figures. So deep concerns about how the Tory spending plans would impact on Liverpool and what grant assistance and what support we get now in specific grants. But overall, I don't see any problem working with whoever is Minister for Merseyside and whoever is you know, the government, in terms of if it's a Conservative government.
You mentioned regeneration projects there, Joe, mm-hmm. and you and I have had a number of conversations about the proposed tramline. Do you think the Tory announcement that Michael Heseltine will be reviewing that particular decision in terms of Liverpool's tram, Do you take that as a positive step in the right direction, or do you actually think that, you know, locally, if we all sign up to it, then the government should be looking to fund that type of project?
Yeah, I think that point you make about what, you know, if it's got the support of the districts on Merseyside, then central government, whatever political persuasion, should support that ideal, quite simply because it's got the support of the districts and the people of the city. But it would be good to explain the case to Michael Heseltine if he's been given that job and responsibility. I'd dearly like to speak to him to articulate the case for Merseytram and for the benefits that it would do, not just to Liverpool, but to Knowsley and the wider region. And I'd like that opportunity. So I do welcome that fact. I think it would be really useful and really good to talk to somebody like Michael Heseltine, who does have an understanding of Liverpool in particular, but Merseyside in general. I would like the opportunity to put that case. So I welcome that if that's... I mean, I've heard that reported in the press, but I don't think it's been confirmed yet, but I would dearly like to speak to him about Merseytram and as I said, the benefits, economic and transport benefits for Liverpool and the wider region.
Sure. Joe, can I just move on to something else briefly? Last week we had Robert Elstone, the chief executive of Everton Football Club, in the studio, mm-hmm. talking about the club looking for future sites that they may be able to redevelop new stadia on. Mm-hmm. And I know they met with Liverpool City Council earlier this week.
Yeah.
Do you have any news from that meeting? Has there been any steps to suggest that Everton might be on with identifying another site moving forward in the city boundary?
Well, the disappointing thing for me is the talks have took place without the the main opposition, despite the closeness in terms of the numerical figures on the council. I wasn't involved in those discussions, but I've had private discussions with Bill Kenwright and Robert Elston, and as I said, I was party to discussions in the past with the former chief executive of Everton, Keith Wyness. So I'm disappointed that we weren't included in those discussions. But what I can say is that I know there are a number of sites that Liverpool City Council have available. There are probably at least three realistic sites that could be available. If Everton wish to start talking to the city, my view is that Everton Football Club have real problems in terms of the finances, and we all recognise that. And what I want is a bit of honesty and a bit of clarity from both sides. One, from the council's point of view, what realistically we can offer Everton, whether it's the land and plan and support and stuff, and what have you, and taking forward proposals. And from Everton, I think we need some honesty around what they have available in terms of finance and what they can afford. And I just think a real willingness then and a desire to make it happen. I can go back over the years and say, we should, when we lost the King's Dock, in terms of which I supported Everton losing it because I didn't think it was the right place. Mm. But since then, that's 7 years ago, nothing's happened, nothing's moved. And I think that's so frustrating. But I do think it's time to make sure that Everton's stadium ambitions to develop a new stadium, whether it's on its existing site or somewhere else within Liverpool, has to be supported by the council and has to be supported not just in terms of lip service, but in reality we have to do something about it and make it happen. Looking at Liverpool Football Club as well, 7 years ago Liverpool were given planning permission, and 7 years later we still haven't had a shovel laid there in terms of any developments, and yet the Anfield is in an appalling condition, part of Anfield, and we have to say to Liverpool, well, look, we want a timeline, and certainly I will be saying that if I become leader of the council in May, I want a timeline from you of exactly what's going to happen, because I don't accept the fact that they wish to wait for an upturn in the economy before they start making a move on that site, and we have to say that's quite strongly to them. And I think, in fairness, as I said, equally to Everton, to say to them, yes, we will work in partnership with you. Yes, we will be open and honest with you, but we want the same from you. And that type of approach and that type of leadership, I think, will make those things happen.
Joe Anderson, leader of the Liverpool Labour Party, and joining us today on City Talks Business. Thanks for your contribution, Joe.
You're welcome, Frank.
Speak to you soon.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, it's now time to have a look at what's been happening in the Liverpool business world and what Downtown Liverpool is planning for the first part of 2010. And I'm delighted to be joined by Downtown's events manager, Roger Jonas. Welcome, Roger.
Hi, Frank.
Well, it's been about the snow this week, hasn't it, and its effects on business. As someone who lives in the city, uses public transport to get about, how have you found things?
Disastrous. Terrible. Everything just ground to a halt. To the point where I think people have really now had absolutely enough of it. Mm. Public transport struggled massively.
Didn't you have to walk home one night?
I did, yeah. Yeah. Which the volume of alcohol that I consumed prior to that, before making the decision to walk home, helped massively. But I'd phoned a regular taxi company that I used, and they said, look, we've got three drivers on tonight, and they're sitting here having a cup of coffee in the control room. So that was out. The trains to my most local station were off, and obviously the buses were off, so I had no choice.
Shanksy's pony.
Right.
Yeah. I think that, clearly it's been a disappointing start to the new year because of the weather for business. But, I mean, I was in Noble House earlier in the week talking to Rob Preston, who manages the bar there, and he was saying, actually, if it was going to happen any week, then that was the week for it to happen. And I think even retail would say the same to an extent. Also, you know, an awful lot of the professional companies now do have facilities where staff can work from home. So it shouldn't be as disastrous as some people are trying to make out, should it?
I think Rob's right. For me personally, I mean, you know, I'm set up at home, so I couldn't get in one day, I think it was the Wednesday, and it didn't make that much of a difference. Technology today has made a massive, massive difference. And I think in terms, you know, retailers were you know, expecting a low yield in that first week back to work. I think schools were hit pretty badly, which gave the kids an extra week off. Well, the majority of schools were an extra week off, which I'm sure the children weren't too phased about. But that's now put an additional pressure on teachers to, you know, to complete the you know, the lesson plans that they had planned for that first week. But I think in terms of business, yeah, I think you're right. I think Rob's right. It's, you know, that week, if it was going to happen, it might as well happen.
Let's get it out the way.
Yeah.
And it's been a bit better this week, and of course, because of the improved weather, we were able to organise our first event of the year, which was a winner's sponsors dinner from the Liverpool Awards back in 2009. And, well, you tell listeners what went on the night.
Basically, we're very grateful to Paul Freeman from Merchant's Restaurant, who hosted this on Castle Street, who hosted the dinner. We always planned after Liverpool that we would have a celebratory dinner as our first event back, you know, for 2010. We had an absolutely fabulous night, and it was a great night. A couple of people couldn't make it because of weather and other things, but 14 of us dined in the little private dining area, and they, as I say, they were all sponsors and winners from Liverpool. What I do need to ask, Frank, is what did you pay Guy Wallace from DWF? Because, you know, I mean, he took the chair and said some fantastic things about you, and I can't believe you.
All true. I'll tell you what Guy Wallace did say that was interesting, I thought, because we were having a conversation earlier about Liverpool and people's perception of the city. And Esther McVeigh actually said, well, we are a bit maverick, we are a bit different. And what Guy was saying was actually what we need to be saying to people is we're the same. We're the same as every other city, but maybe with a sense of humour.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting take on it, wasn't it? Because I think what Guy's point was actually, you know, when we focus on our differences, it can often put people off.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you know, Liverpool can be perceived as being a very insular city. You know, you could build a concrete wall around it, 30 foot high, 10 foot thick, and I don't think many Scousers would be that bothered. that's what I see. I travel. I've got friends in Spain and France, and my family live in Holland, and it's really interesting to see a foreign perspective looking in and how the European media report on Liverpool. And the perspective has changed massively. And for the better, obviously. I think if we can achieve that in Europe, we need to be able to be looking to achieve that as a perspective from our own nation. Guy was very passionate about Liverpool, and I think the words he spoke were absolutely spot on. We are still an insular city, though, I think.
And it's how we communicate the fact that we do have an edge and we do have a different culture.
Yeah.
But we've got to play on the advantages and also have people recognise that, you know, when a job needs doing, we've got the quality to deliver here as well as any other city.
Absolutely. This city is full of fast thinkers, entrepreneurs. I was at a dinner with Gerald Grosvenor, who it was the Mersey Partnership dinner, and he told a great story very, very quickly about a guy who... they closed down the Paradise Street car park for demolition, which was going to start on the Monday. They closed it down on the Friday. The Saturday morning, he came in with a chair, bolt croppers, opened it up, charged £5. It was full. It was totally full for the Saturday and the Sunday. The guy obviously disappeared off into the limbo to spend his ill-gotten gains. But, you know, Gerald Grosvenor, he commended that for entrepreneurship. And they said that his board said, you know, we need to track this fella down and employ him. You know, I mean, what a great sense of humour. It's fantastic. You could only get that in Liverpool.
Mm. And that sort of entrepreneurial spirit is what has driven the city forward in the past, I'm sure. Will again in the future. Just in terms of downtown then, Roger, obviously as our event manager, you've got a programme to deliver for the first quarter. And I know in just a week's time, we've got a sexy networking event coming up at the Sir Thomas Hotel.
That's right. It's our first major networking event this Thursday. Sir Thomas Hotel, 6:30. Looking forward to it. I remember that our first sexy networking last year, people just kept coming through the doors. It was a fantastic event. A lot of business was done. A lot of new relationships were developed. Online registration, of course, as is every downtown event, www.downtownliverpool.com, and the homepage will take you through to our events page where you can register online. And that we do get such a diverse mix of businesses there. A lot of sort of key decision makers, high net worth individuals, and we're looking forward to a really great success next Thursday.
And then, of course, we've got our first property and enterprise forum.
That's right. It'll be on February the 8th, and Grant Thornton down in the Liver Buildings, they'll be hosting the event. Again, online registration. We've got currently two speakers. We've entitled it Preparing for the Upturn.
Yeah, we're trying to be optimistic.
Yeah,
aren't
one has to be optimistic. Year. Yeah, yeah. And we're looking at it from a financial and a marketing perspective. So Les Ross, who is the recovery and reorganisation partner at Grant Thornton, will be presenting based on the fact that as we come out of a recession, more companies tend to fold because of the lack of financial resource. So he'll be looking at how to prepare for that. And how to maximise your initiatives and business growth out of a recession. And Dougal will be looking at how to maximise your marketing initiatives.
That's Dougal Paver, who's been with us this morning.
That's right, yeah. He'll be looking at it from a marketing perspective and identifying some initiatives and benefits that you can adopt to support your growth as you come out of the recession. So again, looking forward to that. They're always very well attended, our property and enterprise forums. And I think it's because of the quality of speakers that we have and also the messages that we put out.
Well, we started with politics this morning, and of course, we're quite excited by the fact that we've actually managed to convince the two leaders of the council, or the current leader of the council, Liberal Democrat leader Warren Bradley, and Joe Anderson, who we've just spoken to there, who's the leader of the Labour Party, to participate in a debate that we've organised over at the ACC, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're currently in negotiation with the ACC to host this event. Obviously, massively high profile event. I think it's quite a coup for the city, and I'm not sure this has ever happened before. And it's great that both party leaders have agreed to go face to face, I suppose. We're just in the we've now got it confirmed that the date is February the 25th. It will be an afternoon event, kicking off at 2:00. We're still in negotiations with certain of the planning elements, but hopefully within the next 7 days we'll have everything up on the website. And watch this space. We know it's going to be broadcast by City Talk, which is fantastic. And who knows what's going to happen? Mm. It could be quite, hopefully not such colourful language, but maybe some heated debate.
I don't think we'll need a boxing ring, but it will be a lively debate between Joe Anderson and Warren Bradley, I'm sure. Roger, thanks very much for joining me. And as Roger said, if you want to know further details about any of those events, simply visit www.downtownliverpool.com. Well, that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business. Thanks to all my guests, and thank you for listening. Have a great week. and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.